Hello there, cultists, and yeah, once again we've got a very special treat for you. Today we're going to be talking to the star of such movies as The Apple, The Last Starfighter, Night of the Comet, and Weekend at Bernie's, actress and director Miss Catherine Mary Stewart. Welcome
Hello.
To the show.
Thank you.
How is everything with you? Is life treating you well at the moment?
Life is good. That's like one of my favorite sayings. Life is good, man.
Oh, well, that's all you can ask for, really. Is the weather doing okay over there?
It is. I live in New York, and it's sort of the dog days of summer. So it's kind of hot and humid. I guess I haven't actually been outside today yet. So, but my husband said that the last few days have been in the 90s Fahrenheit, which is whatever, 30s or something like that, centigrade. But today it's a little cooler, a little bit of a breeze. So after this, I'm going to go out. I have an errand to run anyway, so I'm going to run out.
Ah, okay. Well, I hope it
That's
goes well
my
for
day.
You.
Thank you so much. Fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Well, thank you for joining us today. If it's okay, I'd like to kick this off by asking, how did the journey begin for you? I mean, it's an old hat question, but was there ever a catalyzing moment where you decided you wanted to work in show business?
Well, you did mention The Apple off the top, which I was sort of like, oh my God. Well, that was my introduction into certainly film acting. I was living in London. I don't know, are you in London or
No,
you?
I'm actually I'm further north. Further north.
North.
From the Sheffield area. I'm not sure if you're aware.
Okay. I know where that is. Because I lived in London for a couple of years, and I was a dancer. That was sort of my origin story, I guess. I got into dance, and when I graduated from high school, I wanted to pursue dance, you know? So I ended up at a school called the London Studio Center after high school, and just to, you know, take class and stuff. But it was also kind of a general theater art school. You know, they offered acting and singing and but primarily dance. And so I was sort of unknowingly building a good foundation for myself, but I'd always enjoyed performing. I have to say, through school and everything, I was always involved with the plays and all that kind of junk. So that's what brought me to London. And I happened to audition as a dancer for this movie, The Apple. And I was asked to audition for the lead role based, you know, I was just sitting there dancing away, you know, and they, the director, Menachem Golan, kind of pulled me out of the crowd and had me ask me if I could act. What am I going to say? No, of course I could act. What? And he had me read. And at any rate, I ended up with the lead role in this movie. So that was my kind of tripping into this business. And I ended up eventually going to LA, but just the fact that I had this lead role in a feature film credit really gave me a foot up, you know, foot in the door, foot up, whatever, to, you know, get things moving forward.
How was the experience working on The Apple?
It was great. I mean, I really had no idea what I was doing or what it was all about, or I had no preconceived notion of what it was I was getting myself into. So it was kind of a great attitude going in. I was just like a sponge. I just was like, all right, take me on this ride. And yes, it was a ride. And, you know, especially in retrospect, it was pretty crazy in a way, because Menachem, who was the director, it was quite a character. And I, you know, got to experience him on all sorts of levels. But I made some terrific friends. I had a great time. We shot in Berlin, West Berlin at that time, before the wall was torn down. Yeah, and Hamburg and a couple of other little places. So that was an incredible experience. I just had a great time. I had so much fun.
Nice.
Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. I lost you on my screen.
Oh,
there
okay.
We go. you're back. I don't know why that happened.
You spent a couple of years in the early 80s on the soap opera Days of Our Lives. You often hear that those soap schedules can be punishing. How did you take to that? Was that the case in your experience?
Yes, it was. It was hard, man. As a dan I always thought, I can handle anything because dance is tough. You work very, very, very hard. But on Days of Our Lives, I found it incredibly challenging because you had to learn so much and shoot an hour show in one day. I really struggled with it. I found it very, very difficult. So I'm a huge admirer of soap opera actors because I was just like, this is not that much fun for me. Again, sort of, I established this character that ended up becoming really iconic. I was only on the soap opera for 2 years, but the character they brought the character back with another actor after I don't even know how long, a few years, two or a couple of years maybe, or a year, I don't know. And she became this iconic character, so I can sort of, that little notch in my belt. I was the original Caleb Brady, so I fall back on that relatively often. But it was a short stint, really.
Did you watch when the other actor took over, and were you like, that's not how I would have done it? Or by
Oh,
that point, were you thinking, I'm so glad to be out of that?
no. I was busy doing other stuff by that time, so I wasn't really following the show. I don't even know if I knew that Caleb Brady came back on the show. I don't even know when it was exactly. So it was sort of by chance that I even found out, because I wasn't really like the Days of Our Lives, audience member really. And like I said, when I left the show, I was literally still on the show when I got the last Starfighter. So that kind of crossed paths. And then after that, things just started really snowballing. So I was busy. I was busy and I wasn't really paying much attention. But I was curious, obviously. I mean, she was very different from who I was on the show for sure.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, you've just brought us to the last Starfighter. Like Knight of the Comet, it was released in 84, but in both cases, from what I've seen, the impression I get is one of a kind of a close-knit cast on each of those respective projects. Was that the case on Starfighter?
Absolutely. I mean, The Last Starfighter was this little film that I was grateful to have gotten a role on it. A lot they had auditioned a lot of, as they call them, the Brat Pack, all the like hot actors of the day. But fortunately for me, they weren't that interested in having like really big names. They wanted some young actors that weren't as well known. And thus Lance and I were cast. And it was, Nick Castle, the director and the writer, it was kind of, I mean, this is so cliche to say, but it was like a labor of love for them. And you could feel that. And Nick was such a benevolent director, especially for young actors. And everybody seemed just young and enthusiastic, just so happy to be there and just excited for this little movie and this pretty, a very sort of humble story. I mean, yeah, it was kind of 80s in that there was outer space stuff that happened. But I mean, when you think about the story, it's very sort of intimate. And Lance and I got along really, really well. He and I are still really good friends today. We do these conventions now, and Nick Castle does them fairly often because for lots of different reasons, but so we get together every once in a while, which is fun. I was just talking to Lance yesterday. We were talking about a project. Yeah. And when I go to LA, the last time I was in LA, I stayed with them. They have a little apartment under in their house, and I got to stay there. So that was really nice. But whenever I'm there, I always see Lance and his, partner and his son. So that's really great.
That's brilliant. I mean, you also got a chance to work alongside notables such as Dan O'Herlihy and, you know, music man himself, Robert Preston. I mean, how was it working with those, the old guard, so to speak?
Yeah, I know. I never actually worked with Robert Preston, but I did fortunately get to meet him. We were doing some reshoots at the studio. I think after they had kind of screened it and gotten feedback and things, and they decided to shoot a few extra scenes. And when I was arriving one day, Robert Preston was leaving, and so I was introduced to him, and oh, that was like, I don't know. I always is, but it seemed like he had this golden glow around him. He was really just lovely. He's exactly, at least to me, he was exactly what you see on film. I mean, he just is this lovely, sweet, adorable man.
Yeah,
And
he has that presence.
for sure, I think that, like I said, is that's just who he is, and he's just lovely. He was just lovely. I was so pleased to have been able to meet him. The one scene I did with Dan was when they, land in the trailer park, and I'm introduced to him and everything. And it's funny because when I was working with him, I never saw what he even looked like underneath his makeup. So I didn't really know who he was. And I think it was, and you sort of take these things for granted and you move on, la la la. And I looked him up, and it just blew me away, his resume, first of all, from Robinson Crusoe on. I mean, come on, he's an icon. He was an icon. And but what I was always so amazed at is how under that prosthetic makeup and those, I mean, I don't know if they CGI all that junk now, but it was literally a rubber thing over his face. And how he could sort of create all those kinds of expressions, and the laugh, and you could see everything in his eyes. I mean, that's really like the sign of an incredible actor.
Definitely, definitely. I mean,
Yeah.
I've heard it was shot in, was it 38 days in order to get it out as a summer release? I mean, is that true? I mean, was there any pressure, especially, you know, obviously working in a special effects environment, or was it still enjoyable?
Oh, it was totally enjoyable. I mean, the whole special effects thing was completely behind the scenes. Also, Lance was in like every single scene, so he was there all the time. It wasn't as tough for me. I didn't have quite that schedule. And I seem to learn things, after the fact, but I think it was either the 20th or the 25th anniversary of the movie, they did a screening in Santa Monica in California, and I went to it, and they had all the technical people there for the screening for the Q&A afterwards. And that's where I learned how the whole CGI thing came about. Because when we were shooting, I never for a second felt any pressure to like rush through every, you got to get this done because all this ever, not once. But apparently behind the scenes, the rush was really on the CGI guys because this was such a brand new field, this kind of special effects. And from what I understand, they were literally creating programs as they were going along, trying to create these three-dimensional images. And I guess they were still sort of debating whether or not they would use the CGI or use just the traditional special effects with models and everything like that. So there was an enormous amount of pressure on those guys, an enormous amount. And they even were saying, we wished we'd have more time or had had more time so that they feel like some of the things, I think, in outer space, they fly through these rocks, these bold, huge, massive rocks in outer space. One of the guys was saying they felt like it looked like melted chocolate ice cream, in terms of the detail. It just wasn't what they could, if they had had more time, they would have, been able to make the designs more, much more detailed. But what is also amazing is that it's really the first movie that used that kind of detailed CGI that really set the stage for everything that you see today. I mean, that was something I learned as well. They compare The Last Starfighter to Tron often because Tron had some that similar kind of special effects, but they weren't nearly as complex as the ones that were used in The Last Starfighter. Now, having said that, you look at it today, and I mean, kids especially are like, oh, please, that's nothing, you know? But at the time, it was groundbreaking, for sure.
It was one of the pioneering movies for CGI. And I know Tron gets held up a lot, but I think, to an extent, Last Starfighter kind of gets forgotten about, and I think it's unfair because the amount of work...
Yes, absolutely, but I think part of it is to do with the fact that, you know, Tron was a much more recognized movie, or it was a lot more popular. You know, it was just a bigger movie. Yeah. So yes, and The Last Starfighter, it when it was released, it was just marginally, you know, it didn't have a huge audience. Where they found its audience was the VHS market.
Yeah. That's where I first saw it, and I was literally blown away when I saw that movie. I mean, I've got to say, you know, I'm going to gush here for a second. It touched me on a personal level because I was very young, but I was an avid video gamer. I mean, I spent as much time as I could in video arcades. I mean, none of the kids will know what they were these days. But like all kids back then, I was told video games were a waste of my time. So to see Lance, you know, save the galaxy, it gave me hope. It was like a comeback and all that negativity. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I was ever as good as Alex. The galaxy would be screwed if I was involved. But yeah, it was a bit of an inspiration. So I've got to thank you. And when you do speak to Lance or Nick, please thank them for me.
Oh yeah, sure, I will, of course. And yeah, that's what I love about the movie too, is that it really did touch people in a very human and, to use the word again, intimate way. You know, that the characters, they were just ordinary people that fell into these extraordinary situations. You know, it was I guess Lance specifically, ordinary person that ended up in this extraordinary situation, which is meant to be inspiring. I mean, you know, you can realize your dreams in all sorts of different ways, you know, and I hope that what it did was inspire everyone who watches it to really reach for their dreams, because anything's possible.
Yeah, it certainly did that. I mean, what were your favorite moments on the shoot? Yeah. Any little anecdotes you can share that you might not have told anyone before? Or...
not have told anyone before. Let's see. Well, if I didn't tell anybody before, you're probably not going to hear it now. No, it was. I mean, I did love the whole sequence where we're at the lake and I'm with the beta unit. And the whatever he's called, I don't even remember the name of the alien guy who comes and ends up shooting Alex, the beta unit, though.
Yeah.
And he spurts, he's about to explain to me that he's not really Alex, right? And then this thing squirts out, he's just in a green goo, and I'm like, what? And then the whole sequence after that as well, going to the truck. I love all that action adventure thing, and it's all so very dramatic, and I love all that. And he crashes into the alien's pod or whatever it is, and I leap out of the truck, and then I'm looking into the stars saying, I love you, Alex Rogan. I mean, to me, that is like fantasy come to life. It's like the old-fashioned big movies from the 50s or something like that, where everything was so dramatic. I love all that.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to move on slightly, if that's okay. I mean, with regards to the video game element, I'm going on to now to Night of the Comet, and I found it in a nice little symmetry that your character Regina in that movie is a game fanatic herself.
I know.
I mean, obviously, being in the 80s, it was the craze, but it, to an extent, it must have seemed like, oh, my life is based around video games.
I don't know that I ever even thought about it. You know, it's funny because they were so dominant in the 80s, like you say. So what was fun about it was that it was a completely different genre movie in a way. I mean, yeah, there was some sci-fi elements or whatever, but these two basically valley girls kind of surviving an apocalypse is slightly different from The Last Starfighter. Yeah. So yes, it was, and that whole scene, you know, where I'm playing the game, I'm sure I was flashing back to watching Alex play or whatever, but it was completely different in a way because the character was so different, and I got to be the gamer. Is that what you call them? I don't even know.
Yeah.
I got to be the one playing the game. I got to be the one that was really, really good at it. And there was that sort of tongue-in-cheek thing and the sarcasm involved and the DMK. And it was slightly different. But yeah, again, it's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I mean, two movies in a row that sort of rotated, not completely around video games, mine anyway, but I mean, the Night of the Comet. But yeah, it's funny that that was sort of the introduction to Night of the Comet.
Yeah, I've got to say, Night of the Comet is really one of my favorites. I had no idea it existed. They used to show it quite frequently late night on British TV back in the day, and what felt like every couple of months, and I just fell in love with it. I mean, at that age, you know, it's a zombie movie, but it's a zombie movie with a twist. It's really refreshing. It's fun for a post-apocalyptic movie, as you know, as fun as they can be. Yeah. I've heard director Tom Eberhard's inspiration. He said it came from real-life teenage girls and how they would react to an apocalyptic event. And apparently the girls saw the scenario as just an exciting adventure and only saw a downside to the experience when Eberhard brought up the subject of dating. Now, that fun adventure angle, I've got to say, it comes through in the chemistry between you and Kelly Maroney. Was that one a fun shoot? Because that one does look like you had a blast.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it was such a unique script. When you talk about genres, I think it covers every genre, that movie. We had fun. This movie, you know, The Last Starfighter, I talk about being sort of a small, intimate little labor of love thing. Well, this was smaller, very low budget. But what I loved about it, what attracted me to it, was the character of Reg. It was so refreshing. It was a refreshing departure for me because I was always kind of the girl next door and the all-American blah, blah. And Reg is really sort of more like who I am. And I got to do some more physical stuff and I got to be like tough and shoot guns and all that other stuff. So that is really what attracted me to the whole thing. And then plus the script was just so unique, so different. But we were out there just, you know, around December of 83, I guess, shooting this thing. No fringe benefits like, oh, a fancy dressing room or anything like that. We were just basically all in it together, you know, guerrilla filmmaking, basically. But we just happened to have a great crew. Arthur Albert, the DP, was so fantastic and innovative the way he shot it. And, you know, what we captured in that movie with no special effects was pretty extraordinary. I mean, we were in downtown L.A., you know, around Christmas. I forget, honestly, if it was like Christmas Eve or Christmas morning or something like that. It wasn't like, oh, you get a week off for Christmas. No. In order to capture downtown Los Angeles in 1983, we have to be there when nobody else is there. And in those days, there was nobody there. I mean, there were banks and hotels, and that's about it. Now it's very, very residential, but it's kind of incredible when you look and see these empty streets. You would never be able to capture that nowadays.
No, it would have to be entirely CG to get that same effect. And it's
entirely.
It is impressive. I mean, there is a scene with you guys hanging out in that department store and generally just having a good time. I mean, I imagine that was a pretty good thing to shoot. It's certainly a dream of many to be in that kind of situation.
that was a lot of fun. Yeah, that was, I guess, the research that Tom did when he talked to these girls. You know, one surprising thing was, that sounded great. No parents around. Excellent. Let's go shopping. And the downside was, are there guys that we can date? Or, but you know, the going shopping thing was an important element. You know, the stores are open, and we had so much fun. It's funny because, the Sherman Oaks Gallery, or I think that's where we shot it. Kelly Maroney has a better memory about all this stuff than I do, but everything, all these 80s movies were shot in the Sherman Oaks Galleria, and they were, you know, we would shoot all night. They'd shut down all the stores and we'd go in there and shoot all night just until everybody started coming back to open their stores up. We had a gas. It was so much fun. I mean, it looks like we're having a gas, it was so much fun running up and down the stairs, and we didn't even know what the music was going to be. I love the scene where I'm looking in the mirror and she's saying, what do you think? Should I wear this little wrap thing or that? I'm like, oh, the second one, it'll stay in fashion much longer. Duh, or whatever I say. That cracks me up. No, it was super fun. And brilliant. Kelly and I, really good friends still.
You still talk and, you know, get
all
on?
The time.
Oh,
all
that's
the
fantastic.
Time.
It's awful when you see what you think is a good cast, and then years later they've all had a falling out and stuff. So to see, you know, you and Lance and you and Kelly, it brings a warm feeling to my heart. So
I know.
That's nice.
Yeah, you know, so we're sort of in it all together. So yeah. For sure. I'm really so grateful that we've remained friends. I mean, there were, with both of them, there was a period of about, I want to say 10 years that we weren't in touch. We went off in different directions. And then for whatever reason, somehow, we met up again and just picked up where we left off. So I'm grateful
great.
For that.
That's sign of a true friendship, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that you like Night of the Comet because of the action stuff, and there's that iconic image of Kelly firing the gun and you with your kind of hand over your ear. But I read that you did a lot of your own stunts in that movie, is that right?
I did. I mean, that whole zombie scene in the alleyway where I've left the movie theater, I'm looking for my boyfriend, and there's a zombie there, and we have sort of a fight. That was all me. But I felt pretty comfortable with that because the zombie was a stunt guy, so he knew what he was doing. And it was fun. I mean, he threw me around and threw me into these boxes. I loved it. I couldn't do that anymore. I'm too old. But the one thing I didn't do is riding the motorcycle. I did not know how to ride a motorcycle. So that was, you know, a stunt person doing that.
Yeah, oh, fair enough. Well, I mean, it kind of fits in. I mean, you and Kelly were strong female protagonists in that one. It was very much ahead of its time as far as, you know, genre movies go. Was that one of the reasons that the script appealed to you?
I'm sure it was. It's funny because I don't remember feeling like, oh, finally a female protagonist movie. You know what I mean? A lot of people ask me that question, and at that stage, I just hadn't sort of intellectualized it in that way. I just loved the fact that Reg was who she was, and the situation, the relationship that they had. But a lot of people point that out, and then the first time I heard it, whatever, I was like, yeah, you know, It was kind of cool. And also, I think often, people who make movies that decide what movies are going to be made, they decide based on, well, whatever the last blockbuster was and what kind of money they think they're going to make, obviously, and what kind of audience they're going to attract. And in general, and of course, it's mostly men who are making these decisions. And they and also they're mostly men that aren't really, they're businessmen. You know what I mean? They're not really artists, or they don't come from that sort of perspective necessarily. I'm not saying all of them, but many of them. And I think that the idea that a female can lead a movie is a risk, because what's going to happen to the whole male audience? They're not going to watch a bunch of want to watch girls, that are can take care of themselves. So there's that, that ongoing sort of misogyny, and I think it's still ongoing to a certain degree. But what I love about Night of the Comet is not only was it made, and it got made, and it got exposed again, mostly in the VHS market, to girls and boys, and we do these conventions, and an equal number of guys come up and say how much they loved it as girls, but it which is it just it this whole idea that it's got to be Tom Cruise or something like that, leading a movie and the girl is always secondary. It's just ridiculous.
Exactly. A good movie is a good movie, and I can say that because I absolutely adore this one. It is one of my favorites.
Oh, I love it. Thank you.
With that in mind, what was the craziest thing to happen on that shoot? Is there anything that stands out for you?
Well, let's see. The craziest thing that happened on the ship. Well, there's well, I always think about, I don't know that I've even shared this with anybody, but the first day of the shoot, I crashed my car on the way to the set. So that was a weird start. I sort of got there with my car. I could still drive it. I sort of drove up, and I'm like, so I don't know how I'm getting home tonight. I made it here. Anyway, it was just a weird sort of ominous beginning, I guess. But it ended up like they were very, very happy with the first day shoot, so that was good. These Mac 10s that we had, it's a couple of sort of amusing anecdotes. In our house, there's a photograph of Kelly and me, Sam and Reg, with our father, the Green Beret, right? And the Green Beret is actually a picture of Tom Eberhart, the director, who also wrote it. And when the Mac 10s used to jam all the time, and that scene that you mentioned, where we're shooting the car, basically, it jammed. And then there's sort of this, it became kind of an iconic scene, which we had to sort of make up as we went along. The gun kept jamming, kept jamming, kept jamming, and Tom said to Kelly, just say, "Daddy would have got us Uzis." And then I threw in, oh, car didn't notice the difference, but so that sort of plays into the fact that he was our dad, in the photograph, and he really wanted Uzis for the movie, but they were too expensive, so the producers didn't, they provided us with Mac 10s. So that was his little dig. It was like, "Daddy would have got us Uzis," and Tom Eberhart is like, "Uh-huh, yes, I would have." So anyway, that's a sort of a fun little thing. But yeah, those things jammed all the time. In general, it was pretty smooth. Like I said, we had really bizarre hours that we worked, but everybody was kind of in it together. One time, the makeup guy, he was like the makeup hair guy, didn't show up. I think I don't know if it was a Monday or something, but he'd been out partying the night before, and He just didn't make it that day. So Kelly and I had to do our own makeup, which is fine. You know, we know how to do makeup, but it was, that was something. He says he doesn't remember that, but I remember very clearly. you know, it's lots of, but what was so nice about it is you, at least I felt like I had the freedom to kind of explore different things, you know, do, it wasn't like everything was set in stone. It was, you know, let's, and in fact, the producers kind of wanted to do more of a traditional zombie movie, which it was not what the script was at all.
No.
So there was a time where we were shooting scenes like scary zombie stuff, and then the way it was written, you know. And fortunately, the end product was, you know, Tom's vision in the first place. And that, to me, is what makes it interesting and unique. Yeah. And I think that also attributes to the longevity of the movie. You know, it's just different. It's really a weird movie.
It is. But as you say, and weirdly enough, you're predicting my next question. Movie is one of those art forms whose longevity, if you're lucky, can last a lifetime. But having said that, are you surprised that certain things you've worked on still hold such a passionate fan base all these years later? I mean, you do seem to have a knack of finding these cult movies that people latch onto.
I know. Again, I am grateful that I was that these movies were around during the VHS days, because I think, like, Night of the Comet, The Last Starfighter were classic kind of almost latchkey kid babysitters. You know, they would come home from school and watch. Yes, to answer your question, I am. Because it was never anything I really thought about. And the fact that VHS came around when it did, we're just sort of lucky for that. You know, it really did lend itself to these little things, these little movies. And they're movies that I think parents are comfortable letting their kids watch by themselves. You know what I mean? There's nothing in them that is weird for a tween or something like that to watch. Yeah. So it really did establish a big audience. And I think, you know, I don't know, who knows psychologically why they have the longevity that they do, but I think in my mind, it's like they hit the real sweet spot of the audience, you know, these kind of movies that you are allowed to watch by yourself for the first time. And they're not Disney and they're not, you know, I don't know, Tron or whatever, more sophisticated. They just hit the sweet spot of the kid at the time. And they're also relatable. You know, the characters are realistic in many ways to that specific audience. So they can relate to them. And then it just kind of stays with them. You know, it just kind of embeds in their little psyche. And so many, again, I am surprised that they have the longevity, but I kind of learned about it through these conventions. And the people that come up and say, you know, it meant so much in my life. And I'm 40 now and I'm trying to get my kid to appreciate it in the way that I did. And that kind of thing. It's incredible. Initially, it just blew me away. It still does. I mean, it still blows me away.
Do you enjoy the buzz of the personal appearances at the cons?
I do. Oh my gosh. It's incredible. You're exposed to, you know, fans in a way that you never would be normally. And they really are true fans. You know, they know the movie inside out many, many times. The people that will come up, but they'll know it way better. The details of this movie or that movie or whatever, way more than me. And more about my character, because it was, you know, you just sort of do these movies. That's the 40th anniversary of The Last Starfighter. You forget details. I don't watch it all the time. You know what I mean? And they'll tell me, they'll remind me of things. And I'm like, wow. So It's very special, and it's just special.
That's great. I mean, it brings us to, speaking of fun films, 1989's Weekend at Bernie's, which is another fun one, a really wild premise. Do you have any fond memories of that one? I mean, was the shoot crazy?
That was I wasn't on that a ton. They sort of we shot in New York, which was kind of cool, and then we went down to Wilmington, North Carolina, which was supposed to be, Long Island or the Hamptons or something. And they built the house on a dune. I mean, it had no foundation. That was just a set, that house. They
I
built
had no
a
idea.
pool. Yeah, it's incredible. You'd go upstairs and go behind into a bedroom or something, and there's nothing there. It's just empty. Or you could fall off a ledge, or something like that. It was super fun, and it was kind of great because they just sort of kept me around until I actually had to work. So that was kind of fun for me. I'd spent, a month or so in North Carolina, which was kind of neat. It was a lot of fun. One of the reasons I really wanted to do that movie was because it was a comedy, and I hadn't really done comedies before. And I just wanted to know. I really wanted to know what that experience would be like. And also Ted Kotcheff and Jonathan Silverman and Andrew McCarthy. I mean, yeah. And I knew there was a relatively big budget. It was funny when I was reading the script, though. I was like, skeptical about the comedy elements of a dead guy being dragged around through the entire movie. And I especially the scene, which is like everybody's favorite scene, is when Bernie falls off the back of the boat and is dragged along behind the powerboat and bangs into the buoys or whatever. I thought when I read that, I was horrified. I was like, what? That's not funny. That's too. It's funny because literally this morning, I came across that clip, and it's so funny. It's really super funny. But also, when they finally drag Bernie up onto the onto back onto the boat, Andrew's character looks at him and goes something like, "Oh my God!" Yeah, and Jonathan's like, "What? He lost my sunglasses." I mean, it was just funny. It was so well delivered, and after all this, the poor dead Bernie's been through. He's only concerned about his sunglasses. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Jonathan, I mean, just really lovely people. In fact, Andrew McCarthy was at an event that I was at, I guess last year. And in Mexico, and it was fun to see him again. It was just kind of nice. We have this thing in common, Jonathan Silverman's lovely. Terry Kaiser is another one of those actors that just blow you away. I mean, being on screen with a dead guy, you'd think you would probably, be able to outact him or get the attention. Nope. When he's on screen, dead or alive, Terry Kaiser, man, is fantastic. And again, brilliant actor. You have to be able to pull the audience into what it is you're doing as a dead guy. I love
Definitely. You kind of took a step back a little bit to raise a family, and I've read that on when you came back, you tried your hand at directing. How had
that.
the film industry changed in those intervening years, and how did you find the challenges of directing compared to acting?
Well, the film industry has changed so much, actually, mostly since COVID, because everything is remote now, which I hate, in terms of auditioning and meeting with people and stuff like that. I used to really enjoy going into a room and having sort of an interaction with another human being in the room, as opposed to what we have to do now is, self-tape and There's no human contact. You sort of do your read and you hope it's what they're looking for. It's really just real basic information that you have. So I don't like that. But no, when I got back into it, it was pretty much the same. Obviously I was coming as a completely different character. I mean, I was the ingenue, basically, sort of working my way into getting a little bit older, I guess. And a lot of people thought that I'd quit the industry, which I really, really hadn't. That wasn't ever my intention. But so it was like sort of starting from square one. One of my dreams has always been to direct. So when I got the opportunity to do that, of course, I jumped on it and I loved it. I just love the whole kind of idea of seeing the story as a whole and being in control of all the details, talking with the actors, talking with the crew about what your vision is or how you want it to look, or you know what I'm saying. I loved it. Definitely something I want to do a lot more of. And I've been, one good thing about COVID, I mean, so everything was on hold during COVID, obviously. And it was after things started getting back to normal that everything kind of changed in terms of auditioning and that sort of stuff. And it's never going to go back because it saves production so much money. You know, they don't have to hire, they don't have to rent a space. They don't have to have somebody rent a staff, you know, for the casting, except for the casting director. That's a sore spot for me. Because they just expect you to do the instructions they give you. They'll say, oh, you know, Betty, 55 years old, has a son, 20. And then two pages of how they want you to shoot it. Make sure you shoot it horizontally. Make sure there's lots of light. Make sure the sound is good. Make sure this, make sure that. It's like, this is not my job. Why am I having to do this? Oh, I could go on and on. Because it really does make me angry.
Yeah, I had no idea there were so many, you know, you had it dictated to you so much since COVID.
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk to anybody about the character. You know, what are you looking for? Get specific, like, okay, I'll do my read the way I've been thinking of it, and then you can give me some adjustments. It's all gone. They just give you a basic idea of what the character is, and then how they want to make sure it's a really good self-take so that, you know, they can see you. And anyway, so that's changed a lot. But the good thing I was going to say about COVID is that it gave me a chance to kind of explore developing some projects of my own, which I kind of touched on over the years, like writing a script, and I'd done that, and I enjoy that because I enjoy kind of, I like solitude, you know, I like sitting in the room by myself and just being creative. So I've been able to develop a few projects that I'm still, which was great. It really gave me a foot up with that because I wasn't distracted with other stuff. And you know, some vehicles to direct. So we'll see how that all pans out.
Oh, cool. So what's next on the cards? Bearing in mind, this is not going out for a few months. Do you have anything upcoming you're allowed to speak about, or is there anything that you would love to do but haven't given a chance yet?
Mm-hmm. There's always stuff on the horizon for sure. There's a couple of projects that are just sort of out there in the ether waiting to get started. I do have a couple of conventions coming up. I have one in Philadelphia and one in somewhere else towards the end of the year. So that'll be fun to do that. And I have been like continually working on these projects that I've been developing. So that's interesting. I talked to Lance yesterday or the day before about a project that we might do together. So there's always, you know, things in the works.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what you and Lance come up with. That's definitely intriguing. So you'll have to keep us updated on that. There's been talk over the years of first a sequel to Last Starfighter and secondly a reboot. Did anyone approach you for either of those? And do you think a reboot would work?
I don't think a reboot would be the same thing. You know, it just wouldn't. I've seen lots of reboots, and I don't know if I've ever liked a reboot or a remake. Because especially if you really enjoy the original, they're never the same. You know, they try to make them fancier. There's usually just something that's different about it. And my fear with a reboot with The Last Starfighter would be that it would be all about, you know, special effects and fighting in outer space, and that would be it. And I really feel like, yes, that was a big part of The Last Starfighter, but I think that a bigger part was the relationships between the people and the lesson that Alex learns is, you know, go for your dream, shoot for the stars. If this is the only thing you think you can be, that's all you'll be, sort of a thing. That was the message. And I fear that that would be lost in a reboot. The sequel idea has been floating around. The original writer is involved with that, which is good. And he's apparently been shopping it around, but I haven't. And yes, he has come to Lance and me about it, but I haven't heard anything recently. I mean, even Nick Castle, the director, was talking about it a number of years ago. So there's still that. I think it would be like a continuation of the story. You know, they gave us an idea of the basic direction, but I can't really share that. But just know that Lance and I would be in it, and it'd be sort of more next generational kind of thing, which sounded really interesting to me. I mean, I'd love to be a part of that.
Yeah. I think a lot of the fans would love to see that. I would imagine you've got that kind of reaction at the cons as well whenever it gets mentioned. Yeah. So, I've just got a couple more questions. The first one, it's off on a tangent. I hope this is okay, but we ask every single guest on the show this. So, hand on heart, if you had to choose a favorite cult movie of any genre that you personally go to every time, what would that be?
Oh no, I'm really terrible at these questions, these spontaneous questions. Cult movie, favorite cult movie. Oh gosh, oh man.
I'm really sorry to put you on the spot like this.
I know, I'm like, because my brain goes scrambled when I'm asked these kind of questions that I haven't really had a chance to think about, or because there's so many. Oh, well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean of when you define it as a cult movie, but one of my very, very favorite movies is classic from the 70s musical, Jesus Christ Superstar. I love that movie so much. I have the soundtrack. Whenever it's on, I watch it. So that would be definitely my go-to movie. I don't know if that is a cult status movie, but
that definitely counts. So, and that's a very good answer. So thank you for that. And
I'm
finally,
a child of the 70s. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. And as a dancer also, things like Jesus Christ Superstar and things like Fame. Remember that movie Fame?
Yes.
About the kids in the school in New York? Yeah. Love those. Just love them.
Oh, nice.
Anyway.
Well, no one's ever chosen that before, so that's a good one.
That's good.
And finally, it's one question, and it's going to be a horrible Sophie's question, so you don't have to answer if you really can't. But hand on heart, Last Starfighter or Night of the Comet?
Oh. Now, in terms of what watching it or when we shot it or just in general.
Well, be doing an episode either on Last Starfighter next year or on Comet. So I'd like to take the choice out of my hands and hear it
Oh.
from yourself, your good self, if that's okay. Which one do you...
Yeah.
I know it's an awful question, but if
No,
you had to
it's fine.
choose.
Well, I guess if I had to choose, probably Night at the Comet, mostly because, my role is a lot bigger and more, has more of an influence in the story. And it's unusual,
Yeah.
and there's lots to talk about with the Comet,
Oh, nice
especially
one.
from my perspective, having acted in it. Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely do Night of the Comet, but no doubt the season after I'll try and slip in Last Starfighter anyway. So
Absolutely. I'm totally on board with that as well, by
awesome.
the way.
So yes, I just want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join me here on the show today. As a long
Yes.
time admirer of your work, it's honestly it's been an honor, it's been a pleasure, and I hope you've enjoyed it more than anything.
I've
So
enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. And yeah, it was fantastic. And keep
anytime.
the light on. You got a
Oh,
great face.
okay. My editor would disagree, but yeah. And yeah,
Yes.
thank you to you out there. I hope you've enjoyed our little chat with Catherine. And if you haven't watched Last Starfighter, Weekend at Bernie's, or especially Night of the Comet recently, I urge you to do so, along with Catherine's other works. They still hold up. We'll see you next episode, and until then, I'll leave the last word to you, Miss Stewart, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, shoot for the stars.
Fantastic.
You've been listening to the Cult Classic Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast, with special guest Catherine Mary Stewart. Created, written, and hosted by DK. Editing by Nick. Produced by Mike Wilson. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. This has been a Mad Badger production for the Media Matters Podcast Network. Copyright 2024. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.